So great. We're here with Padres 360, Wade and Rebecca, and we've got Coach John Quintero on the line. Pretty excited to be talking with you, Coach. How you been?
Doing well, Rebecca and Wayne. Very nice to be with you and looking forward to another big year of baseball.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Pitchers and catchers reporting, and we're ready for the action.
There's no question about that. It's going to be an interesting year for our home ball club here in San Diego, just from the simple standpoint. I think there's a lot of unknown. What kind of manager is Andy Green going to turn into? You hear a lot of great stories about his organization, his baseball knowledge, and the way he ran his teams when he was managing down in the minor league. But, you know, he's got to work with his staff. He's got to communicate with his players. And, you know, the spring training is going to be very, very important for Andy Green this year.
He seems to have it all on paper, and he says a lot of the right things. But it's really when we get the people together that I guess will tell us what the reality is and how it's all going to come together.
Well, you know, you can be the greatest manager in the world. If you don't have the horses, you're not going to do a whole lot. You know, there are a lot of unknowns about this ball club. I do think there's some talent on this ball club. Some of it has been untapped. They haven't had an opportunity to maybe showcase their skills at the big league level. But, you know, I think you got some good young guys. You brought in a veteran in John Jay, who played for many years there with St. Louis, came up through their farm system, and you know, I think he's going to add something to this ball club. And I guess more than anything else, you got to figure out that starting rotation. You got three guys right now with Shields and Ross and Cashner, hopefully a bounce-back year, but you really got to take a look at that four and five spot in the rotation. And I think that's probably the biggest question mark they have going to spring training.
Coach, this is Wayne. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And you mentioned about John Jay. That's actually one of the questions I have for you. And since you mentioned Jay, I'll ask you about it. We were sort of surprised about the deal for John Jay. I've liked him as a player. But I was just curious what you think that Jay brings to the Padres.
Well, I think, number one, a winning attitude. I mean, this guy's had a pretty good major league career. I mean, he's played in a lot of big ball games in his career. He's not a guy that's going to drive the ball out of the ballpark. He's only got 29 career home runs, but he's a guy that knows how to play. He can play any of the three outfield positions. He played primarily center field most of his career. And so right now, I think they've probably got him slotted to play in left when Melvin Upton Jr. is in the lineup. But, you know, he had a down year last year, Wayne. He only hit .210. He's a career .287 hitter, and I think he's going to bounce back and be closer to that .287 than he is .210. He had a lot of injuries last year, and you know, I'm excited about him. I've always liked his game. I think he's a tough guy to strike out, and he's a guy that career-wise has been a .354 on-base percentage guy. And you know, last year just a little over .300. So you know, every once in a while you're going to go into a year where you maybe get off to a slow start, or you got an injury you're trying to play through, and it really affects your overall play. So you know, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, so I'm sure he's worked very hard during the winter, wants to have a great spring, and wants to have a great season, so he can maybe cash in on a nice payday after this year.
Well, I sure hope that he does. I think I agree with you as well. I think he's going to have a really good bounce-back year. Now, you talked about starting pitching, and the question I have is, of course, in the Padres in the offseason turned around and dealt Joaquin Benoit and Craig Kimbrell away within, like, 36 hours. Were you surprised by both of these trades, and do you like what the Padres got back in talent for both these men?
Well, I wasn't surprised so much in Benoit as I was in Kimbrell. You know, they gave up a lot. Because they had to take on Melvin Upton's contract that, you know, for what he's done, really doesn't warrant that amount of money at this point in time of his career. He had some good years with Tampa Bay and struggled miserably in those 2 years with Atlanta. But they wanted Kimbrell. They wanted to go for it last year, so they were willing to sign off on that deal for Melvin Upton Jr. I think they got some good young players. But, again, they're good young players. They haven't played at the major league level. And they're prospects. And until they can show they can be everyday major league players, they're prospects. And, you know, you can talk about those guys all you want. They all have good tools. They've all got good resumes for the level they've played right now. But until they play in the big leagues, they're just prospects to me. You know, you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do now at the back end of the rotation. I know they signed Fernando Rodney, who I watched pitch a year ago in Seattle and didn't look very good. When he went over to the Cubs, I thought he threw the ball much better. I think one of the things the Padres can do, and I thought they've been able to do this for a long time with Darren Ballsby, they can take some chances on guys because Darren usually can get through to them either mechanically or mentally. And, you know, I think that's a real plus having Darren Ballsby continue as a pitching coach here in San Diego. But he got a lot of good arms, you know. A lot of guys that not many people know about. You and Rebecca and I know a little bit about the guys that are coming back, but they're bringing some guys in that have some really good arms. And I think he's going to be able to put together a pretty solid relief core once he figures out who's going where, and that's all important, too. You want a guy not to throw the eighth inning when he's the seventh inning guy. And you know, nowadays these guys go five-plus in the starters, maybe six, and then you can shorten that bullpen and go with your big three down the stretch, seven, eight, and nine. But I think there's some really, really good arms in this camp. Again, they're guys that haven't maybe done it at the major league level, and if they have, they haven't done it for an extended period of time. But I think they got enough of good arms in this camp. They're going to be able to put together, I think, a pretty good bullpen.
Is there a guy that you personally like that you are looking forward to see pitch this year? Is there maybe a surprise that you know about with the Padre arms, either new guys we've acquired or maybe somebody that's already there?
Well, this one guy they got is a Rule 5 guy, Luis Perdomo. He's about 6'2", only weighs about 160 pounds. I talked to Darren a couple of weeks ago, and Darren really likes this guy. Now, he'll probably start as a reliever, but Darren thinks down the road he might be able to, you know, bust into the starting rotation, maybe not this year, but in the future. I think he's only, if I'm right on, I think he's about 23 years of age, and Darren really has looked at a lot of tape on him and seems to be real high on him. The other guy I'm anxious to see, because he's done really well as a reliever and has really struggled as a starter, is Drew Pomeranz, who they got in the deal with the Oakland Athletics. You know, he was the number one pick coming out of Mississippi. And, you know, he started out with Colorado, and that's probably not the best place to start your career, having to pitch at Coors Field. But he's had a hard time as a starter. But now he's been around for a few years. He's had success in the bullpen. You know, if they want to give him a shot to maybe be a left-hander in that rotation, that's another area, Rebecca and Wayne. I think they need to have a left-hander this year in the rotation. I mean, Robbie Irwin's going to compete for the back end of that rotation. We've seen Robbie the last couple of years, you know, with mixed results. But, you know, Pomeranz is a guy that I'm kind of anxious to see along with Perdomo.
Well, one acquisition myself that person I really liked and I think would have been a big difference on the club last year was the acquisition of Alexi Ramirez at shortstop. Your thoughts on what he brings to the Padres?
Well, Alexi Ramirez, first of all, has had a really nice major league career. I know he's played there with the White Sox, and you know, before I go to the ballpark tonight, you know, I'll catch a lot of those Wednesday or Thursday games in the morning when I'm working. And so I've watched Ramirez play quite a bit. You know, he may not be the same player he was 3 or 4 years ago as far as range, but you know, I think this is a tremendous upgrade. Probably not going to hit with the power that he once did, but he's a guy that is a major league shortstop, and he's going to get the balls, he's going to field balls, and you know, the routine ball is the one that kills you. I mean, when you come up with a great play, that's great, but you know, those are few and far between. You just need a guy at shortstop that can be consistent day in and day out. And I like this pick. I like it for a lot of reasons. Number one, I've always enjoyed watching him play. And number two, I didn't want to see the Padres spend a ton of money on Ian Desmond. I think Desmond's a good ball player. I think he had a down year last year. He did hit some home runs for Washington. But I think with what the Padres right now, from what they're telling us they have in the farm system and what I know they have in the farm system, this is a good bridge to, you know, maybe give one of these guys another year of growth. And who knows? Maybe Ramirez comes back for another year, but right now they got him under a one-year contract. And hey, he's a major league guy that's done it for a long time, and I still think he can play. And I think he has something to prove as well because he didn't have a great year overall last year with the White Sox.
Well, going into camp here, there's continued to be trade rumors swirling around Matt Kemp, and you know we've also heard stuff about Derek Norris. One, do you think there's any truth to that rumor, and do you think both of those guys end up starting off the season wearing a Padre uniform?
Well, let's start with Matt Kemp. I don't know. Everybody wants to point out what Matt Kemp can't do. I'd like to point out what Matt Kemp can do, and that's the guy that we saw last year driving 100 runs. And you've been watching Padre baseball for a long time, and we can name those guys on about six or seven fingers, okay?
I thought he had
a great second half. The thing that I liked about Kemp, because I'm down around that batting cage every night, I saw a guy really struggle, and I saw a guy come out to batting practice every night, work on some things, try to change some things, and then he went back to his style of hitting. He used his legs a little bit more, and he started to pound the baseball pretty well. Let's remember, he's the only guy now in Padre history that has hit for a cycle, and I thought he finished the year really, really well, and I thought he played a pretty good right field last year myself. Now, some people may say, well, he didn't do this or he didn't do that. I think because we watched Kemp for so many years with the Dodgers, we expect him to be Superman. And I think overall, I'm glad Kemp's on the team. I hope he's on the team. He's making a lot of money, no doubt about it, $23 million. But in the Padres, from what I understand, are going to start the year right at about $100 million, and they have some holes to fill. And if they want to move Kemp, they're going to have to get something in return, and that means we're going to have to get some young arms and probably a young middle infield prospect. Let's talk about Derek Norris, because I think Norris played pretty well last year. I know he got tired. He wore down. I don't know if I've ever seen one catcher take more foul balls in one year in a major league season than Derek Norris. But
absolutely.
Let's remember, Derek Norris last year, that was really his first year where he was an everyday catcher. A lot of the times when he was in Oakland, they had another catcher. The year before, when he actually made the American League All-Star team, they had three catchers. And so he wasn't having to endure that wear and tear day in and day out. I think he'll be much better prepared. He comes to play every night, wants to be in that lineup every night, whether it's behind the plate or they stuck him down there at first base a little bit. This guy likes to play. I think he did a good job working with that staff. Some of those guys on that staff are not easy to catch. Shields last year was all over the place with a lot of 3-2 counts. Tyson Ross is tough to catch. He's got that great slider down in the dirt. And Cashner, you know, Andrew, as much as I love him as a person, he had a rough year last year. And those guys aren't easy to catch because they're throwing that ball in the mid-90s. And I like Norris. I hope he's here. He's very affordable. The only reason they would trade him, I think, is that they could get something in return that could help this ball club fairly quickly.
Yeah, we like Norris, too, a lot. And I surely had a lot of fun watching him, and he's got so much heart out there. So I hope to see him out there myself. But you mentioned earlier about, we talked a little bit about Andy Green. Who do you think, Coach, I mean, you've been around for a long time in Padres baseball. Who do you think's the best manager the Padres ever had?
Oh, I think, ever had. That's hard because you're talking about different eras. I think Dick Williams was obviously the right guy back in the early to mid 80s because he brought legitimacy to the Padre franchise. He brought a toughness that I think that organization never really had. I think Bruce Bochy, learned early in his career on the job the way he was and watched Bochy when they got some talent around him to watch him, how he would communicate with his players. And, you know, one thing, Rebecca, people, they don't know this about Bruce Bochy. Bruce Bochy is a really pretty tough manager. Everybody thinks he's kind of a country bumpkin, and he's not. I watched him numerous times after ball games when he was upset with a player or he thought a player was not performing to their level. I'd watch him call him in and sometimes give him confidence. Other times I'd see him, get on him a little bit. If there was ever a problem on Bruce Bochy's ball club, he wouldn't sit behind his desk after the game. He would go out and fix that problem to where it didn't fester to the next day. And, I'll tell you what, Buddy Black, had that one winning year, his first year here, And then he had the 2010 year. And, you know, he dealt with a lot. He went through a lot of ownerships. He went through a lot of general managers. And he was the one guy that was, you know, still standing. I think he was a great leader in a lot of areas when everything else was falling down around him. And, you know, it's a tough question because everybody looks at a manager, the guy that wins, he's the best manager. Well, not always, but, you know, I think in Padre lore, you got to love what Dick Williams brought to the franchise, the toughness and the grit, the accountability. I think Bruce Bochy brought a lot of that, and I think Buddy Black did it a little bit different way, but I think there's a lot of good things about Buddy Black as a manager, his knowledge. He's one of the smartest baseball men I've ever been around. And, you know, I told Buddy one night sitting in the dugout before a ball game, he's the only guy I've known in baseball over the years that I thought could, if he wanted to be the president of the team, he could be the president of the team. If he wanted to be the GM, he could. And if he wanted to manage the team, he could. I mean, because he can relate to people. And that's what managing is, coaching is. You got to be able to relate to people, communicate, and you got to hold people accountable for how they're going about their business.
Absolutely. And I think you named three really great people there with Williams, Bochy, and Black, and I certainly see where you're coming from on those, and the relationships are so important. It's funny, as we look at today's managers, I keep seeing so many different things. I mean, the hot button right now, even on all the interviews for the replacements, was how are they going to use sabermetrics? Well, I think those things are important, but what about the relationship? So what's your view on how much they're putting on the managers to really watch all these sabermetrics and everything right now?
Well, you know, I think anything that can help you to win, you'd be foolish not to look into them. You know, I'm an old school baseball guy, but over the last few years, you know, I've paid more attention to them. Guys that really helped me in that area is when Sandy Alderson and Paul D. Podesta were here. You know, Sandy came in and they had that moniker. And I remember telling Sandy one time, we were talking at the Hall of Champions after a luncheon, and I said to Sandy, I go, you know, Sandy, I go, you and I totally probably disagree on how to put together a ball club. I go, but you know what? You and D. Podesta have taught me a lot, and I thank you for that. Sandy, you know, Sandy did good things here in San Diego. You're never going to get credit for it, but I thought at that time with the ownership, with what was going on, I thought, you know, he was a pretty good leader in the front office. And I think the people that worked for him, maybe not so much on the baseball side, but on the business side, they really enjoyed their history with Sandy Alderson. I think he did a pretty good job. But, you know, I think you got to look at that. The one thing nobody can ever take out of baseball is a human factor. You don't know how a guy's going to perform in a tight situation. You know, how's a guy going to charge a ground ball in left field with the tying or winning run coming around third? Sabermetrics aren't going to help you on that a whole lot. You know, so you've got to look at those numbers. And the big thing that I like to look at is I like to look at matchups, especially left-handers going against left-handed batters, because a lot of times guys will go automatically decide, okay, you know, we're going to go to a right-hand hitter. Well, you know, some left-handers can hit left-handed pitching, and it, you know, you got to know that. You got to know who can and who can't, and, you know, some left-handers may be a little more difficult than others, and, you know, that's kind of the old gut feeling. But, you know, I think the more you can information you can garner on your players, on the opposing players, and whatever numbers you feel are important, you got to try to use them, because the other teams are going to use them, and you want as big of an advantage or an advantage that you think you can have by using all the material that's available to you. And there's a ton of information. But the other thing, you can't get, you know, it's kind of like hitters. I really think hitters hit too much. I think they hit way too much. I think sometimes they just feel they got to hit, they got to hit, they got to hit. And I think sometimes they get swing weary. Well, I would say the same thing about statistics. There's so many great stats out there, but you can overblow your mind and fatigue yourself over a six-month, 162-game season getting drowned in stats. And it really comes down to, at the end of the day, what's that guy out on the mound trying to do? What's his best pitch? What's his two-strike pitch he's going to try to get me out on? And you got to be able to make adjustments. You got to find a way to get the job done.
Absolutely. It's been interesting watching it too. I've watched quite a few manager videos recently, and they were talking about, you know, you got to be prepared for the game. The bottom line is any good manager in any walk of life is going to be highly prepared. And so part of the preparation is understanding who your matchup is, what your statistics are, what you're looking at, where you're going to get your competitive advantage for that game to get ready for the game.
Well, I think, I go back to Dick Williams and Bruce Bochy and Buddy Black, and I guess I'd use Buddy Black more so because he didn't have the talent year in and year out, maybe as Boch and Dick Williams did in the short time he was here. One of the things I always look at, man, how are the guys going about their business? Late in the year, and Buddy Black's team won a lot of games. If you go back and look in August and September, yeah, they may have been out of the race, and people say, well, you know, the pressure wasn't on them. Well, you know what? There's pressure every night if you're a competitor, and you're going out there against another guy who's trying to do a good job, and he's trying to win a ball game. And I always like to look at teams late in the year and see how hard they're playing for their manager, because I really believe that a lot of teams, even though they may not be a pennant contender, if they like their manager, they're going to play hard. They're going to win some games at the end of the year. They probably have no business winning because the other teams are out of it. And they may not like their manager, and they know their manager is going to get fired. And I'm not going to say guys are going to go out and try to play poorly, but that little added extra that maybe they could give, they're not going to give for a guy they don't like playing for.
As you look at the end of 2014 into 2015 and then also the beginning of this year, there's just a massive, massive turnover with the management position. And who do you find really interesting that's out there that's come on the scene either last year or this year? But what are you finding interesting with all the shakeups and some of the people that are in place where they are right now?
Well, you know, you kind of caught me off guard on that one a little bit. I hadn't really been thinking about too many other ball clubs other than the Padres, but I would certainly look up the freeway, our friend Dave Roberts. He was the first guy I interviewed on radio back in 1987. He was a sophomore quarterback at Rancho Buena Vista High School, and we've been friends ever since. And I followed Dave through the minor leagues and would call him and try to pump him up when he was getting stuck in AAA there in Cleveland behind Kenny Lofton. And I followed his trek back here to the San Diego Padres, and he finished up there with the Giants. But I think it'll be interesting. Dave's walking into a good ball club. He's walking into a tough place to manage. You hear over the years, about the old, for the Dodger ball club, 25 players, 25 cabs. He's got to figure out the situation there with Puig. I mean, Puig's been a real problem up there, and I don't know how much longer they want to put up with that problem. But they've got a lot of talent up there, and I think Dave's going to, they're going to have that spotlight on him right from day one. Everybody loves Dave Roberts. You couldn't ask for a nicer guy. But he's walking into a firestorm up there, I really think. The other guy that, going back to last year, the guy that impressed me is actually in this division, and that's Chip Hale over there with Arizona. Now he's got a real good ball club. I mean, Dave Stewart, Tony La Russa went out and really beefed up that ball club. And I thought Chip Hale did a great job last year. I thought his guys played hard. I thought they were fundamentally sound. And I thought he did a pretty good job being a first-year major league manager working with that pitching staff because, really, it comes down over the long haul. And I saw Bruce Bochy do this over the years when they would get into extra inning games or long games where he had to burn up a lot of pitchers. He might sacrifice a game on a Wednesday night to be able to try to win the game the next day and the next three or four days because he didn't want to burn out that bullpen entirely. And, there's some managers that don't know how to use that bullpen, and those guys are on fumes the last 2 months of the year.
True, true, very true. It's going to be an interesting year for sure to watch that. Even the NL West in itself is a pretty fascinating case study.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at that rotation right now. You've got Matt Cain like the fifth pitcher in the rotation for the Giants. I mean, you got Bumgarner, you got Cueto, you got Samardzija. Holy cow. I mean, that's crazy. And right now they got Matt Cain as like the fourth or fifth starter in that rotation. Of course, he's never really come back from that surgery he had a couple off seasons ago and all the innings that he'd pitched in his career. But the Giants will be tough because those guys like playing for him and they'll play hard every night.
Coach, you mentioned Bochy, which leads me to the question, what is your favorite Padres memory?
My favorite Padres memory? I got a few, but I'd start off with the first Major League game I was at in 1969, the first night the Padres ever played a Major League game. My mom and dad, or actually my brother and his wife took me, and the game started at 8 o'clock, Wayne, believe it or not. And I got out of school at 3. We went to Balboa Park and had a brown bag sack lunch. And I kept bugging my brother to go to the game. And I wanted to get to the ballpark, you know. And I was about 10 years old, if I recall. And we got there at about 6 o'clock, and you couldn't believe there was nobody there. And, you know, it's the first night. And Dick Selma threw a complete game. Ed Spezio hit the home run. And the Padres won 2-1. Selma threw a complete game, and Don Wilson, who was a great right-handed pitcher for Houston, he went 8 innings and took the loss. Both pitchers went the complete game, believe it or not. When are we going to see that again in an opener for any ball club? And so, you know, that was a great one. I was dating my wife when Tony broke in and got his 2 hits that night against the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, obviously Garvey's home run. But I'll tell you, the other one that was big was when Chris Gwynn got that double up to win the division title in extra innings on that Sunday afternoon. Chris had just a miserable season and was fighting and struggling. And to see him, and I developed a real close relationship, and I was working the Charger game that day in the press box. And when he got that hit, I actually had tears in my eyes because I knew how much that man had gone through that year. And I knew a lot of the stuff was going on behind the scenes with him, and I was really, really happy for him.
I remember that as well, John. And it's funny you say tears in your eyes. I mean, I felt the same way because I still remember the struggled all year, and he take that fastball, and he just crushed it right in that gap. And that I still remember the Padre dugout running and people running out and everything and just freaking out. And of course, Hoffman finishes the game with a fastball on the inside part of the plate for a called third strike. And, you know, the Padres end up taking the title that year.
Yeah, that was great. And, you know, I've been there for, you know, some of Trevor's big nights when, you know, he rolled off career saves. And Randy Jones, some of the nights Randy pitched, I think it was he won the ERA title that one year, if I'm not mistaken, at home, and all the TV cameras rushed on the field. And, you know, Randy was really our first big national star. I mean, the guy was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He got the save in 75 in the All-Star game, started and pitched 3 innings in 76. And, you know, he was a guy that you could really hang your hat on. And the fans, you know, just absolutely adored Randy, and they still do. I mean, that's why Randy's still doing what he's doing all these years later, because he's so accessible to the fans. And, you know, Randy never forgot where he came from. A lot of guys do, but Randy Jones, one of those guys that's never done that.
We're truly blessed to have him here. Final question for you, John, and we'd both like to thank you for your time. What is your favorite baseball memory?
Oh, favorite baseball memory. Oh, probably the double play to beat the Cubs to go to the 84 World Series, because it was such a miraculous comeback the night before, and it was a miraculous comeback going against Rick Sutcliffe on that Sunday afternoon. You know, to be able to get to where the Padres had been prior to that, that double play to end the ball game, you know, has to be right up there with any baseball memory I've ever had, just because I'm a hometown kid and I always pull for my hometown ball club.
Coach, I can't say enough good things about you. The kindness that you showed us at Lolita's so many times after watching Padre games, and just your accessibility and your warmth as a person. And we just love you as a person, and you are truly a fan of Padre baseball. And John, I want to thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it. And feeling mutual. It's always fun to see you and Rebecca and the boys come into Lolita's, because I know you guys are passionate, and I think that's why we've always hit it off real well. So you guys love the game, you're passionate, and you always come, you know, wanting to talk baseball. And those are the people I always seem to gravitate to.
Okay, well, thank you so much, John.